Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is October 23rd, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events, How Do I Have a Free and Inspired Life? It's sold out. We'll be doing it here in Menlo Park on November 8th and 9th. I'm very excited. So that's south of San Francisco, but we'll be reporting to everyone. And then our Christmas lunch is on for December 13th. We'll be posting that in the next week or two. You don't want to miss that. Richard Dolan's going to be the speaker, so come on in. It's going to be a wonderful Christmas time in New York. Our theme tonight is the governance mystery, and I know you've heard me pound this drum. I'm going to keep pounding it. We don't understand how the governance system works on planet Earth, and we need to. We need to, because most of what people describe as problems are not problems. They're symptoms. They're symptoms of how the real governance system works and what the real agenda is, including the fact that we have an enormous financial drain. It's almost like everybody on the planet's being harvested, and that drain is going somewhere, and that gets us into the governance system. I bring this up again because I published a new book review this week. It's called, the review is called, This Does Not Change Everything, and it's about Naomi Klein's new book, This Changes Everything. Once again, we have a climate change argument, which is unbelievably terrible. And I describe it in detail in the book review. Check it out. It's just slipped off the homepage, but if you go back a page or two, you'll find it again. The book review is called This Does Not Change Everything. What Klein fails to do is all the different things you need to do if you're really going to assess trends in the climate and how it relates or does not relate to sort of man-made behavior. She doesn't do any of them. It's a very sort of emotional combination of sort of a roundup of things going wrong on the planet and attributing all of them to climate change. It's really not a serious work, but it really does pull on the heartstrings. What she never does is address what is the governance system, because let's say everything she said is true and we have terribly urgent climate change, all as a basis of our use of fossil fuel and environmental stress, all man-made. Let's say that's all true. Then the governance system that we have let us get into that trap. Why would a governance system that worked do that? It wouldn't. So whether you believe that our problem is significant and unnecessarily in environmental stress, or you believe that life on Earth is going to be unsuitable or unsustainable for most of the population, both of those are results of a failed governance system, which means the real problem is the governance system. So, you know, as I keep asking again and again, why are we living on a planet where we're not allowed to understand who runs things and by what process, how resource allocation works? Anyway, check it out. It's important because, once again, whenever you take an ideology or you take a definition of a problem and you create a sense that it's really true and it's really important, we need to do something, ultimately what you do is you create a weapon that the people who run the planet can use to centralize more control. So I'll just read you the last two paragraphs. Naomi Klein has tried to define problem solution within the official reality. It's fine to do so at cocktail parties. However, doing so in the world of serious policy debate simply creates a weapon that our secretive governance system, whoever they are, can use to institute yet again more central control. The secret of central control is the problem, not climate change. Bring transparency to our governance system and watch breakthrough solutions start to emerge on hundreds of important issues, climate change among them. So, the governance mystery. I note I was on a radio show the other day and I once again said, you know, how important it was that we solve the governance mystery. And I said I didn't really understand who was running the planet and on what basis. And somebody later posted something that says, oh, well, you know, she's lying because she was on the inside, so she really knows, she's just not saying. That's what you have to understand, how few people on the inside really know what's going on. Anyway, money and markets. Our story of the week, by hands down, is media wars. We are watching media wars everywhere. One of the reasons that you see increasing level of shrieking and hysteria on all these different issues. I'm not saying some of them aren't, you know, sort of games and tricks by a variety of parties, including government. But there's no doubt that the level of shrieking and hysteria is really a battle for market share between cable, telecommunications, newspapers, TV, radio, internet. The whole media spectrum is competing, and now you're watching, you know, competition way across platforms. So we're talking about major market share wars, and part of this is the technology, because everybody's trying to squeeze their medium into the little mobile platform. So we're all trying to squeeze in the smartphone and get the customer's attention at a time when the invasive technology means access to each customer can be more valuable, not just in terms of what you're doing with the customer, but your ability to harvest them for purposes of either selling them stuff or insider trading on a variety of different information. So in one hand, the, you know, sort of accessing and training the customer is getting more valuable. At the same time, everybody's having to squeeze into that little mobile platform. So unfortunately, it's making a lot of Americans feel, you know, because they're getting an awful lot of attention. It makes them feel important, included, and entrained, all in very negative ways. So we have a negative feedback loop where the Orwellian nature of our media psychic storm just grows. And the psychic storm itself maintains denial by progressively noisier, more extreme stories. In the middle of the pea soup this fall, we've plopped ISIS and the Ebola stories, and they serve a variety of purposes. I went into them in detail in the last 2 weeks, particularly last week on Ebola, so I'm not going to address that again. But this week I want to add to the pea soup the Gary Webb story, which has been simmering with the release of a new movie about Webb called Kill the Messenger. Webb was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News who broke the story in 1996 of CIA complicity in Contra drug trafficking into South Central LA, or broke the allegations. He really nailed the story and everybody knew it. He put documentation up on the web. The San Jose Mercury News, being in Silicon Valley, was sort of first with the web. And what happened was you had minority radio stations all over the country download the documents. And by the time the Washington Post and the CIA really came after Webb, along with some of the other media outlets, and were able to intimidate his editors into taking the story down, really, Humpty Dumpty could not get put back together again because too many people had the documents. Webb then published his story in a book form called Dark Alliance. It's excellent. You can get it at all the, you know, all the normal bookstores. I'm sure you can get it or order it through your library. It's a remarkable book. What the movie gets into is sort of what happens and the real attack by media with the help of the CIA and their destruction of Webb. What the story never gets into in Kill the Messenger is exactly who made sure that Webb got all the documents. There was a deeper game going on. So no real illumination of who wanted Webb to get this story and what their agenda was. Webb can't tell us now because he died of two gunshots to the head, ruled a suicide. I ask this because it's time to ask the question of how exactly Kill the Messenger got made and distributed. And it's very important to sort of step back and look at the big media game when you look at that. Kill the Messenger is being distributed by Focus Features, which is owned by NBC Universal, headquartered at the Rockefeller Center in New York, which is owned by Comcast in Philadelphia. Now, who is Comcast? Comcast is the largest cable company in the world. It is now in the process of pushing through approvals at the Department of Justice and the FCC of a proposed merger with Time Warner. So just at the time that the largest cable company in the world is, and all cable companies, big or small, are fighting for their life right now, is trying to push this all through the antitrust division or the FCC, they just happened to come out with a movie about the Dark Alliance allegations. Now, let's go back. In 1996, when the Dark Alliance allegations rose to the fore, we just passed the big telecommunications act, and you were just seeing an unbelievable rush for turf as they were building out the cell tower system around the country. The only thing ultimately that got the allegations off the front page, talk about shrieking and noise, was the Monica Lewinsky-Bill Clinton affair. And if you lived in Washington at the time, as I did, it was just, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was relentless, pounding every media all day long, all the time, nothing but sort of Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, and which then evolved into the efforts to impeach Clinton over his related obstruction of justice regarding the affair. And the impeachment effort ended in 1998, but you need to understand how it stopped. The House voted to move forward with the impeachment process, and shortly thereafter, the CIA published its Inspector General investigation on the Dark Alliance allegations, which was Clinton saying, "You bring me down, and I will bring down everyone." That everyone would include most of the Republican Party, which will explain why shortly thereafter the impeachment leadership announced they would go through the process, but the president would not lose his job. It was an amazing time to be in Washington. I remember one of the witnesses to CIA drug dealing in South Central LA came to my house, and I invited over a group of attorneys and other sort of power players in Washington. And during the speech, two black helicopters came and hovered over the roof garden on my mansion in the middle of Washington, which told you it was a real power salon. It was very funny to give you a sense of the perspective of all the law partners in the room. They all broke out laughing and thought it was very funny. So now we have Comcast trying hard to push through this merger. And I find it fascinating that they're distributing Kill the Messenger at the same time. During this period, we have Eric Holder suddenly resign. Remember, Holder was deeply complicit in some of the sort of narcotics trafficking and prison stuff going on in Washington at the time. And certainly has been embroiled in the Fast and Furious, the Fast and Furious allegations related to the Mexican cartel drug dealing. So it's kind of, you kind of wonder, okay, what does this have to do with what's going on? And then, of course, we see Al Gore's old chief of staff, who works for a law firm that's deeply intertwined in the story, who's suddenly appointed to the Ebola czar. Now, these folks are very sensitive about the profits of genocide, whether in Africa or South Central LA. So the fact that this guy's going in as the Ebola czar makes you wonder. And I think some of the Ebola hysteria has really been to drown out the noise of the Dark Alliance allegations, you know, at a time when nobody wants to face angry voters at town hall meetings during a midterm election. It is very important to understand how many children and families in America have been destroyed by drugs, let alone the related millions incarcerated and what that has to do with it. So there's a lot of hysteria on this, and as you're watching the different games and pushback, you're seeing a lot of hysteria. Needless to say, Comcast's distribution of Kill the Messenger is also a great shot at the print media, the Post, the New York Times, and the LA Times, at a time when there's quite a lot of debate about numerous regulatory policies that drive who controls the customer, including things like net neutrality. It's interesting that we now see today the FCC suspends review of the Comcast Time Warner merger, and Judicial Watch posts exemptions claim for Fast and Furious, not only for Holder but his wife. What's that about? And at the same time, with Monica Lewinsky drowning out the original allegations, voila, Lewinsky comes out this week and gives a speech in Philadelphia, Comcast's headquarters, home base, after a decade-long silence. So there's a very deep game going on here, and we're looking at it. We're looking through the glass darkly. We don't understand everything that's going on. It's far from over. Expect more mudslinging. So stay tuned for more media wars as everybody tries to squeeze into the little mobile platform and the, you know, the effort to cover up things coming to the surface gets more and more shrieky and Orwellian. The big story in the markets this week, as it was last week, was deflation in the oil price. And there could be a number of reasons. I'd say the second most important is the global slowdown, although I think the U.S. economy looks much stronger than most other places. I think the bigger reason, though, is a real effort to let the price drop. The price has been managed much higher than I think market economies would produce, as we've discussed many, many times with Jim Norman, the oil card. But I think the air is being let out of the price because that's going to really put the squeeze on Russia. Sure enough, we see different headlines about what's going on in Russia and the need to really support their oil companies as their revenues take a real nosedive. So oil deflation, and it's very much a part of trying to bring Russia to its knees and sort of win the dance between who's going to be the number one friend to Europe, Russia or the United States, and who's going to be the number one oil and gas producer. We're seeing tremendous lower gas prices around the country coming into the election. That's a very typical election ploy, but it's also going to help U.S. manufacturing. What's been amazing is if you look at the combination of the beating of the drum of Ebola and ISIS and lower gas prices, it's working. We have very little coverage of the elections. And many people seem to have suddenly developed amnesia about the real issues during the elections. It's kind of frightening, but there it is. In many parts of the country, and you certainly see it out here in the San Francisco area, the economy is relatively strong. People who think it's not stronger in the areas or the industries are the people who are being shut out. So, but you're seeing a lot of strength in many areas. What we're watching is the blood coming back to Empire Central as the QE ends, and we see more QE in Europe this week, but as QE ends here in the United States, the guys who are going to get squeezed, the liquidity is going to pull back from the emerging markets. Liquidity will be pulled back to protect the U.S. It's one of the reasons you see dollar going up. And as I've described before, you know, one scenario that is possible next year is a rising dollar really bear traps borrowers around the world, and the dollar just gets stronger and stronger. The stock market bounced over the last couple of days, but it's been correcting. We've come down two legs. It's bouncing now. Big question, will we get a third leg? We're way overdue for a 20% correction. We've gotten about a 10 and now bouncing back from that. I think the chances for a 20% correction are very, very good. Some people are saying, is the bull over? I think it's unlikely, but anything's possible. We'll just have to see what happens. But don't be surprised if we get another leg down. You wonder, I told you I thought Ebola was a serious health issue in Nigeria, including in West Africa, including the possibility of biowarfare. But we get a headline this week from Fox News: Nigeria declared Ebola free, holds lessons for others. And you wonder, I wonder what deal they cut. Anyway, it's not so wonderful. Ebola in the United States, there is no health problem other than sort of what's the limited number of cases that have been reported. I think there is a media campaign which has multiple goals. As I said, I think shooting out the Dark Alliance is one. Unfortunately, vaccines is another. We're seeing a real push from multiple sides for vaccines. There was a big Wall Street Journal editorial last week that I mentioned last week that was just pounding the pavement as to why vaccines were so wonderful and how anybody who'd be against vaccines was basically a nut. It's just more pounding the pavement. There's a shopper discount now. You're seeing it at Walgreens, CVS, Target, a number of different places. I literally walked into the store this week. If you will get this year's flu shot, you will get 10% discount on all your purchases. There's a couple of articles up on the web saying, oh, well, that's because stores know that flu shots are so important and they want to get their sales. No, somebody cut a deal behind the scenes. You wonder what it was. Is the government putting money in their pocket? There are numerous explanations for why they want vaccines. None of them are pretty. These are all very negative. And for those of you who are with us during the swine flu squabble, you know how strongly I took a stand on opposition to a mandatory vaccine. I hope I don't have to do the same thing here, but keep an eye on this, because one thing we are going to do, it's, to me, it's an absolute safety issue. to not let mandatory vaccines get caught on at the state or federal level. But keep an eye on that. There's some great stuff on vaccines in the archives, but John Rappaport's website has a lot of great stuff on vaccines. Election. It looks like the Republicans are going to get the Senate if the election was tomorrow, but again, we got 2 weeks to go, so anything could happen. A little bit of a hullabaloo on mortgage lending standards. There is an effort across the industry to lighten them up. I wrote a commentary, everybody saying, oh no, we don't need another housing bubble. It's very important to understand the housing bubble. The problem was not lenient standards. The problem was very significant systemic fraud. Somebody said to me today, well, doesn't leaner, you know, lighter standards or more flexible standards allow them to do more fraud? Yes, but if they're all going to be run as a criminal enterprise, it doesn't really matter what your standards are. If you look at how many people are sort of upside down and because of the tight standards can't refinance or do other things, it's pretty painful. So there are a lot of good reasons legitimately to have to lighten up the standards. They always make them too tight after a bubble. So there's a commentary that I put up on the blog. You can read it there. The Vatican Library is undergoing a massive digitization project. One of the most amazing things could happen on this planet is that we really get access into the Vatican's library. I keep telling this to people and say, well, you know, they didn't digitize the best stuff. No, but it's a beginning. So kudos for the new Pope. Our hero this week is the San Francisco Giants. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area for, you know, I come out here twice a year, and it's wonderful to be in a city where the hometown team is winning and winning and winning, and then now is in the World Series. We had the first two games in Kansas with the Kansas City Royals in Missouri, and now the Giants came back today for three straight games. We'll see what happens. Very exciting. So check out the blog post, Why I Love the San Francisco Giants. I grew up in Philadelphia, and I spent my entire childhood, we never made it to the World Series. We never got a World Series win. So it's a very special thing to be in a city when that's going on. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. This is a topic I have great interest in. I have about 12 inventions I'd like to fund and get patented. This was posted related to crowdfunding. So my questions would be, do you need to patent your idea before you reveal what makes it novel and unique to the public as part of a fundraising effort? No, you don't. The problem is if you do make it public, you may give things away, and then somebody else takes your idea and patent it. So it's the big question of, do you want a patent before public? And if so, why? You can always put the patent in the commons if you want to make it available, but you might want to stop somebody else from patenting it and taking it private. We just saw Elon Musk of Tesla say he was going to stop patenting things, or make his patents available to others, because one of the reasons he's given is if you patent it, then the Chinese can figure out what you're doing and steal it from you. Then the next question, how do you determine what your target fundraising goal is? I think you want to determine how much you need for the phase you're crowdfunding, and you want to, but you also want to set it at what's feasible. You can work with platforms where you have to make your target or you get nothing, or there are other platforms where, in fact, you can get less than your target and get the money. You just pay a much higher fee. So it really depends on what you think is feasible and how much you need. How do you give people an incentive to invest more than what the actual value of the final product is? If they want to support you and if they think it's for a good purpose, there are a number of ways to do it. And in fact, you may give them, have ways of giving them things in addition to the product itself. So it's not just the product that you may offer as a incentive. The next response was from a wonderful scientist about the climate change article that I wrote, giving me a lot of affirmation about it. I don't want to read what he sent because I just don't want to give him away. He has a very sensitive position, But I really want to thank you for that. That was a very, very touching response. Dear Catherine, here's what I believe to be a good article discussing the importance of Edward Snowden, featuring an interview with the director of the movie Citizen 4 that's just now being released. Oh, that looks good. I'm going to check it out. This article mentions how more than 5 million people here in the U.S. now have security clearances, and the director mentions how she herself was put on a watch list. Doesn't surprise me at all. I posted that up on the blog. Dear Catherine, when you say you've posted something on the blog, are you referring to the homepage of Solaria.com, to the webpage of this week's Solaria report that you're currently speaking on, or the webpage for each week's Solaria report is on the homepage. We always keep it at the top of the homepage. So yes, it's both of them. They're both on the blog. Let's go to the movies. This week I recommended Unmistaken Child, which is a remarkable documentary by a group of Israeli filmmakers about a Tibetan Buddhist monk's search for the reincarnation of his teacher, who was a world-renowned lama. It's a very remarkable story because it starts off when the lama died, his young attendant, this Tenzin, young monk called Tenzin, who's distraught, decides to go search for the reincarnation of his master. The belief is that they reincarnate back shortly after their death. And so a variety of monks, all the way up to the Dalai Lama, help him with the search. But the filmmaker had met the young monk and was so impressed with him that he decided to start filming and film the search, not knowing what would happen or what they might find. And indeed, they did find a child who eventually, with the help and support of his family, came to live at the monastery. And you see the whole process at the end. Because of the people involved and how remarkable they are, you really get to go inside of Nepal and Tibet and have a real sense for a Buddhist monastery and the life and the spirit of the place, and get to watch the commitment and faith that the Buddhists have in reincarnation. It's something I believe in and believe was edited out of the Christian tradition. So it's it's one of the things that puts me crosswise with the more Orthodox Christians. But anyway, if you're interested, it's really it's a remarkable story, and the fact that these filmmakers sort of tracked this whole 4-year process on faith that something might happen, and it did. It's quite amazing. And of course, the young child and how they believe the young child is in fact the reincarnated Lama. It's just fascinating to watch. The child is amazing. So take a look at it. It's really quite remarkable. Our interview today is John Rappaport's Spiritual Warfare. It comes at an entirely different way than Franklin and I. We came from the Christian tradition, and John is, I don't know if you'd call him a committed atheist, but he comes at it from a much more sort of grounded material world view that I love, because I find myself aligning with him so much, even though we look at it entirely differently. He's really talking about how various forces separate you from a spiritually enlightened state, you know, out of a higher mind into a lower mind, out of love and into fear. And in fact, you know, once you get there into fear, into the lower mind, into doing exactly what the leaders want you to do. And he starts off talking about Ebola and marketing of the different fears du jour. It's quite good. Anyway, it's another take on spiritual warfare, but I do think that so much of what's going on in this planet is spiritual warfare, and really developing and learning the tools of the trade on spiritual warfare can make an enormous difference to really navigating this environment. So I really appreciate John doing that. Okay, that's it for this week. In closing, We've got some great things coming up. Next week, the scientific breakthroughs of Global 3.0 with Dr. Joseph Farrell. I said in the annual wrap-up, I said in the third quarter wrap-up, I'll say it again, the changes that we've gone through in the last 10 to 15 years are just the beginning. That's sort of the gathering of the money. Now we start to reinvest, and you're going to be watching an explosion of technologies and scientific breakthroughs. You know, some of them are not new. It's just the integration of different breakthroughs now coming to critical mass or becoming economic, or the integration. One of the powerful things about what's happening is with information technology now making communication easier, you're watching much more integration between different fields. Anyway, it's quite remarkable, and it's just going to continue and speed up is what's likely. And when I talked to Joseph about doing this, he said, now you need to remind everybody I'm not a scientist. But in fact, you know, he's very good at unpacking these things for lay people and then helping you get straight on what it means for geopolitics or investment. I love to stop and talk with him just to understand what these things can mean to investment. It helps me tremendously. So I really thought you would really enjoy it and would make a contribution to your understanding of why I say, you know, strap in, because it's just started. We're getting ready to move into warp drive. So that'll be next week, Global 3.0, the top scientific breakthroughs with Dr. Joseph Farrell. Then the next week, we're going to be doing successful home buying. I've been talking or communicating with a variety of sort of experts on the home buying process, particularly for first-time home buyers. We've got a lot of people in our network who are finally considering buying a home, and among the younger generations, and I want to make sure they do it thoughtfully. But I also have a lot of thoughts about it as well that relate to sort of the real deal component of successful home buying. And then, so we may do more than one. This may take a series. And then November 13th, third quarter equity overview. Given everything that's happening in the market, we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to be dovetailing with the third quarter wrap up. We're going to use the trends that we did on the third quarter wrap up and go back through them and talk about, okay, now what does this mean in terms of the investment environment and what's happening in the equity markets? So until October 30th with Dr. Joseph Farrell, the scientific breakthroughs of 3.0, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.